The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to another edition of the UAB Director's Chair. Of course, we couldn't do it without the director, the athletic director of the UAB Blazers, who's Mark Ingram. He is doing this show from my hometown of Cincinnati, Ohio. And you told me you had some Tums, did you, last night?
Yeah, you know, you have some Skyline Chili and pile on some La Rosa's Pizza. Yeah, you know, you get some of those Cincinnati favorites. And you're going to need something to help the heartburn, no doubt.
Get some Grater's ice cream up there. They're pretty good at that. There's a great place up there called Montgomery Inn. They are known for their ribs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Great ribs.
It's a great German town, too. You can get some great bratwurst and stuff up there. It's a great eating town. And I know how much you love to eat as much as I do, man. When I get up there, Frisch's Big Boy, there's another one. I mean, there's some places.
Will be hitting Frisch's later today.
There you go. And I believe it's Bowling Green, I think, is the first exit. That's the one with the Corvette Museum, where the floor fell in a couple years ago. But I believe that's the first exit you can get off of to hit White Castle. So, I mean, I'm like, I could have just eaten dinner, and I'm stopping. I'm getting 12 of those bad boys on the way. So, I'm glad you're up there. Tell my friends and family I said, hey, and I know you're coming back. So, let's talk some college sports, some college football. We got some great stuff to get into. Of course, we're in the middle of bowl season, depending on when you hear this particular podcast. We usually keep our podcast up for a week, but they live in infamy. You can listen to them whenever you want. But executive directors are getting together and expecting to examine bowl criteria, how the NIL is affecting it, shifting bowl games back a week, because in 2024, obviously, we're going to be expanding the playoffs, more flexibility in conference bowl affiliation, and more TV partners. And let me just say this. I just went to the game last night, the Ticket Smarter game in your home, the Protective Life Stadium, with East Carolina and Coastal Carolina, and East Carolina looked great. And I know a lot of people don't like the fact that there's so many bowl games. I don't know who these people are. There's 43 bowl games, and I love it. I'll take as many bowl games as I can get. I love the fact that every day during the holiday season, there's pretty much a game on every single day, sometimes two, sometimes three. And I absolutely love it. I think you're not a college football fan if you don't enjoy watching an East Carolina and a Coastal Carolina. It gives you an opportunity, really, to explore and you know, knowing that East Carolina is obviously in the AAC, correct? I mean, the UAB Blazers are going to be in that conference next year, so I got a chance to set my eyes on this team. But I absolutely love it. What's your thoughts as an athletic director?
Yeah, listen, I love college football. I love watching these kids compete. I would add bowl games. I certainly wouldn't take them away. And we've talked before, I get disappointed in hearing people talk about, you know, the one of the favorite terms out there, negative terms, is meaningless bowl games. And I say to anybody that ever brings that up, I just say, listen, you know, you've never been, if you think that, you've never been in a locker room with a group of kids like we did in 2017 when we became bowl eligible. It was around the eighth or ninth game of the season. We became bowl eligible that year. And that locker room was like we'd won the national championship. And I've been in a national championship locker room, so I'm telling you, the feeling from those players was like that. It's a special thing when you're in that room with those kids who hadn't been to one before, or maybe the school hasn't been to one in a long, long time like us. To do that, it's a huge achievement. And then I've also been in a locker room where a team became 6-6, and then, you know, maybe the next day or 3 days later, we gather them together to say, hey, I'm sorry, the way the math works this year, we didn't get an invitation.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, after the celebration in the locker room of we got to 6-6, oh my gosh, we're going to go to a bowl. And then a couple of days later, the athletic director and head coach have to deliver the news, which the AD and coach have nothing to do with. You're lobbying like heck for your team to get an invitation, but you can't force that, and delivering that news, it's awful. I mean, it's just so anybody that says that and uses that term, there's too many of these, or it's meaningless. These are the people who focus all their attention on the college football playoff and not just the love of the sport and the game and watching these guys compete.
Well, I'll take it a step further, because I know during March Madness, you may not make it into that field of 64 plus the playing games. Then, of course, you get the NIT. Now you got the CIT, you got the CBI, you got all these other teams playing basketball. I'm like, the more sports on TV, the better. I don't care what it is. I mean, I don't care if it's a 5-7 team playing college football. My eyes are going to be watching the television. So bring it on, the more college football. And you know what? A lot of people are like, well, no one's going to watch or no one's at the stadium. We, you know, during 2020, 2021, when we had COVID, we had empty stadiums and people still watch.
Everybody's watching. And that's what you're doing it for. The television audience is there. They wouldn't keep doing it. Listen, ESPN's got plenty of things they can put on their network. They wouldn't do this. They wouldn't sponsor these games. They wouldn't go to the tremendous amount of effort that it takes to put these games together if there was no value in them. And you bring up March Madness. This is why I'm a proponent for expanding the tournament. I'd love to see us double, if not more than double, the tournament. And my rationale there is, you know, there's about 100, and I think it's 131 football, FBS football teams, mm-hmm. and 86 get into a bowl.
Yeah.
Okay. But there's 300, and I'm going to get this wrong, but I'm close. It's like 353 Division I basketball teams. Yep. And only 68 get in. And that's adding those four play-ins.
Yeah.
So you think about how hard it is, and coaches are measured on how they do they get to the postseason, how frequently do they get to the postseason, and then how do they perform in the postseason. And boy, that makes it hard on a basketball coach. It's just really, really hard to get there with the number of games. And then, you know, depending on the conference you play in, you can't control your conference schedule, which all dictates you know, where you fall nationally in your ranking, and that's what determines who gets into that top 68. It's just really, really hard. And I think we would all agree, when you're watching the basketball tournament, what's most exciting is those Cinderella teams.
Yeah.
Right? You love watching St. Peter's, the Peacocks, make a run. Like, is awesome. And that team was good, you know. And we get so locked in on the logo on our uniform and not, you know, just what is a good team and what's a good team chemistry and can these guys play the game fundamentally. And anyway, so I'm a proponent of adding that, and that's for the men's and the women's tournament. I think more competition is healthy.
He's Mark Ingram, athletic director for the UAB Blazers, and of course he does all the athletics and getting ready for a great 2023. The basketball program's 10-2 right now. We'll talk about them in just a few seconds. And this is called the UAB Director's Chair. You know, something that's also interesting too, the average bowl game last year averaged 4.7 million viewers. That's more than Major League Baseball playoffs and some NBA playoff games. So don't tell me people aren't watching these games just because the stadium's empty. It doesn't matter. You're not going to be driving to Shreveport or San Francisco or anywhere else to watch a bowl game anyway. So enjoy it on television. Let me ask you something, and maybe I'm totally missing something. I love college basketball and all these great tournaments they have. They have the Coaches versus Cancer tournament. They had the one down at Legacy here. There's all these tournaments where they put Kansas against Kentucky every single year. Can they do more of that with college football? I know we have the Chick-fil-A Kickoff Bowl. I know we have several of these. Is that a TV situation where they can't make more of those? Is it a situation with scheduling? How does that work?
No, those are just neutral site games.
I love them.
That the two teams agree to play at a neutral site. They'll, you know, maybe a city decides they want to have one of these, and they start approaching teams about playing their game in their neutral site. You know, Alabama played in Dallas a couple of times, I think, over at AT&T against Southern Cal, and seems like there was another one. But, you know, it's a fun thing to do, but I will say it's hard on the fans, you know, because if it was going to be your home game, your fans that have season tickets, they were expecting that home game, and now they got to travel to see their team. So, you know, these higher level teams that are making it to the CFP, when you start going, okay, we're going to start off the year with a game somewhere, not here, wherever here is for you, and then you make it to the CFP or a bowl, you know, later in the championship, if you make it to your conference championship. So now we got another neutral site travel game, and then we've got two rounds of the CFP potentially. It's just a lot, and, you know, trying to respect that. And what we do is not inexpensive, right? We ask our fans to make donations, and those donations to the program guide where they sit, you know, the location that they sit in and how many seats they can have, how many, you know, we allow them to purchase, right?
Yeah.
And so you got to be sensitive, price sensitive to your fan base too. But they are great contests. From the spirit of competition, you're right, it's great to have a stadium where 50% of it is one school color and the other 50% is another school color on a neutral site and get after it. I think it's fun, and they do them all over the country. And yeah, well, you know, we played a neutral site against Jacksonville State down in Montgomery, which was not, we didn't design it that way initially, but it was all around the sort of finishing the construction at Protective Stadium. And
I was
and
there. That it was great.
Was there. And
I love
yeah, it.
It
was great that they gave us that opportunity. And Johnny Williams, who works down there, is an old friend of mine, and he helped us put that game together between the two schools. And, It was good for us, and I think good for Montgomery, I hope, and good for the two teams that played in it.
It was neat to see it in that facility, actually, too. I thought it was super cool. To kick off 2023, we're going to be taking all your email questions. I've been getting a bunch of them here. info@TonyCurryRadio.net. info@TonyCurryRadio.net. You got any questions about college sports or from Mark Ingram personally or specifically, send them to us, and next week we'll ask all email questions on the show, and we'll get you covered up. Something really interesting going on here with the HBCUs, and I think it's wonderful. But now Ed Reed, the Hall of Famer, 9-time Pro Bowler, is going to be coaching Bethune-Cookman out of the SWAC. He's been a senior football advisor at Miami over the last 3 or 4 years, so it's not like he doesn't have any coaching experience at all. Of course, this on the heels of Deion Sanders being at Jackson State, now going to Colorado, Eddie George at Tennessee State. Talk about that a little bit. I think it's really, really cool to see these guys who obviously don't need to coach for the money. They're Hall of Famers. They're going to these HBCUs. When they go into programs, maybe perhaps they feel like they have to go to a smaller program in order to go to a Group of Five or a Power Five school like Deion Sanders did. But can you talk about that a little bit? And then I want to ask you what the difference is between being a player and a coach.
Well, there's a lot there. You know, Ed Reed was, as we all know, a phenomenal, phenomenal player on probably the best defense ever assembled in the NFL, which was the team that our coach, Trent Dilfer, was quarterback for, and the Baltimore Ravens. And when we played at Miami, you know, we played down in Miami against the Hurricanes in that fall of 2020, that COVID year where there were no fans at Hard Rock Stadium, and I got a chance to meet Ed down on the field, and I had never spoken to him before. I've got some old college teammates that were teammates of his, and anyway, we were just talking, and I was really impressed with him, first of all, just to speak to him. I didn't really know. You never know what you're going to get. You know, you go introduce yourself to somebody and they could be really friendly or they could be really aloof or whatever. And he was really friendly. And frankly, I could have asked for a better, you know, conversation with him. And so I can absolutely see why, whether it's Bethune-Cookman or anybody else that might have considered him would have enjoyed their conversation with him. That's what I would say about that. As far as, you know, his knowledge of the game, I wouldn't question a bit. And but what it comes down to for me, and we had this, you know, when choosing Trent Dilfer, is have you led people? Have you organized the locker room? Have you organized the staff? Have you managed the staff? You've got personnel issues, an issue that you didn't used to have, at least when I played, and didn't have probably when Ed played in college. Now we have parents. My parents would have never called my coach.
Yeah.
Parents call coaches now. Parents call the athletic director now.
Why is that?
We can't help ourselves. I mean, I say that because I'm a parent of four kids, and you get frustrated. You think back to the time where somehow, you know, you didn't get to play because the coach's son got to play over you. And
is it a good thing, though? Player. I mean, is it a good thing?
No, it's not good. No, you've got to tell your kids, and my wife and I have worked very hard at this, and we're certainly not where we'd like to be. But when things come up, we just say, well, you need to go talk to the coach about it. Yeah. We'll help guide them. I think that's our role, guide them on how to handle a situation, right? How to speak to the coach, what to say, what to ask for, and help them to understand that what they're asking isn't disrespectful.
Yeah.
You know, we'll say, listen, it's only disrespectful if you say it disrespectfully. You know, you can ask questions. Hey, coach, I'd like to play more. What do I need to do to play more? That's not disrespectful. You know, but anyway, we got to let let our kids, you know, sort of learn how to fight their own battles. And I think coaches appreciate that. But nonetheless, back to Ed, you know, these are the things that were important to me. Have you done those things? And I know what Ed's title was at Miami. I don't know enough about, you know, what his role day to day, what was he doing? Mm-hmm. So I couldn't speak specifically about him beyond saying, I don't question that when they met with him, they were impressed by him.
Yeah.
Because he's like I said, he's got a great resume as a player. And again, in my relatively short interaction with him, I really enjoyed it. Came away, you know, feeling impressed by him. And so anyhow, I think these are the things. And why do you start small? I mean, I think everybody's got to start somewhere, and you're not going to go from not coaching to, you know, coaching at Texas or Ohio State, you know. And there's risk in every hire. It doesn't matter who you hire. There is some amount of risk. We talked about that as well when we hired Trent Dilfer. We felt like but there was an upside with Trent that we didn't see in anybody else. And while there was risk with everybody had we made a traditional hire. And, you know, I don't want to speak for Bethune Cookman, but I suspect they may have had some of the similar conversations about what Ed Reed brings, you know, to them. And, you know, my friend Mickey Allen is the athletic director, was an old teammate of mine. He's the AD at TSU who hired Eddie George. And, and he has said to me, you know, like, Eddie's a businessman.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, Eddie is really, really smart. And everywhere we go, people are impressed with Eddie. And when he meets with recruits, he impresses recruits. And so you're trying to draw attention to your program that's greater than what you had. And it doesn't matter what your program is, if it's whether it's Bethune-Cookman or TSU or Jackson State or UAB or Missouri, you're trying to draw more attention, positive attention to your program and hoping that that broadens your national reach and the national attention that you get and the amount of interest in your program on a grander scale. That's part of the decision. So, again, I don't want to speak for them, but assume these are all the things that they talked about.
No, there's no doubt. I mean, what a splash. I mean, to be at Bethune-Cookman and all of a sudden find out that Ed Reed is going to be your head coach, and much right. like UAB Blazers with Trent Dilfer. I mean, I felt yeah. the exact same way. It's fantastic, and obviously it's a different bit of a slant with the HBCU slant to it. You know, it's interesting. You're listening to the UAB Director's Chair with Mark Ingram, the athletic director for the UAB Blazers. You can hear the show wherever. We're on every major podcast indice. So wherever you listen to your podcast, you will find the show. Check it out. I think of two player coaches or who were very successful players that it just didn't turn out well when it came to coaching. One was Pete Rose. You're obviously in Cincinnati right now. I know when he was actually a player coach. He was actually playing on the team he was coaching. Yeah. And then the other guy who I just thought was going to be a great coach, but he expected too much of his players, was Michael Singletary. He was just such a hell of a player, so intense, so passionate. I thought, man, this guy's going to be a great coach. And he really called out a lot of guys in his first couple of years of coaching, and it fell apart. What are the intangibles that a coach has that a player becomes a coach does not have? You just mentioned that Eddie George has a good business sense. What are some of the things that a coach that understands or perhaps has been coaching for a while that maybe was a previous player has that a player who just played for 15, 16 years think they can just start coaching and be successful at it does not have?
You know, this is similar to, I would say it's more of an extreme example, but it's the same thing as, you know, a person who's sitting in the chair next to the athletic director who decides, and I was that person prior to coming to UAB, I'm ready to be the AD. I'm ready to call the shots. I'm ready to make those decisions. And then you move over into that AD's chair, and there that you feel like you get this 50-ton weight dropped on your shoulders that you just didn't realize was going to happen. And the same thing happens for the head coach. You're the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator, whatever, assistant, and you feel like you're ready to be the head coach, and then you move into that chair. When everybody walks into the building every day wanting to know what it is you'd like for them to do today, that's a lot of pressure. It's just a lot. And it's not as much about knowing the game. Right. Like, do you question that Pete Rose knows the game of baseball? Of course you don't. Yeah. And right. It's not about knowing the game. Like I said, it's about managing the players, managing the staff, organizing practice. I mean, these things don't just happen. You're the person that makes that decision. What does practice look like? What are our meetings going to look like today as a staff? What film are we going to watch? What games are we going to prepare for? Tony, you're going to watch the Arkansas State film. Mark, you're going to watch the Georgia Tech film. You know, like, as you prepare for next season and you're starting to do all these things. Well, you're, as the head coach, you're the person that has to direct everybody to do that.
Yeah.
You know, when do we take time off? How long is our workday? You know, some people think you got to go in at 6 a.m. and not leave till midnight every day. Other very successful coaches are like, no, we're not getting in before, you know, 7 or 8 o'clock, and we're leaving here by 7 o'clock. We're going home to our families, you know. And I've seen that successful on both sides. So which is right? Right. Yeah. Which one works? Well, they both work. It's how you manage and lead people. And so that's to me, not knowing enough specifically about, you know, the Singletary or the Rose situation, but you're right. These are great players. It's not about the sport, right? It's not about, do you know the X's and O's of the game? Do you know, you think Mike Singletary knows defense? Yeah, I think he probably does. And, you know, but are you prepared to, in football, manage the game as it comes to you? And in baseball, you're doing that too, but it just doesn't happen as fast, right? There's not a shot clock, a game clock, excuse me.
Well,
and
just because you know how to fry a chicken doesn't mean you don't know how to own a KFC franchise. I mean,
it's like, yeah, or raise them. You know,
yeah,
I know
exactly
how to cook them, but do I know how to raise them?
No doubt. This is the UAB Director's Chair right here, exclusively on the TKR Podcast Network, Tony Curry Radio. You can listen to now 14 different shows on Tony Curry Radio. Get the TKR app, but like hundreds of thousands of folks have already downloaded. And of course, wherever you get your podcasts, we have well over 1,000 episodes of music intensive shows, of computer shows. We have non-for-profit shows. We have UAB shows, all kinds of great stuff. Check it out. Your basketball program's only lost 2 games. You're 8-0 at home. You've got the UTEP game coming up here tomorrow night, and depending on when you listen to this podcast, and obviously on New Year's Eve, you got UTSA. Anything you want to add to what the basketball program's doing? They're doing exactly what we thought, right? I mean, they're playing lights out, great defense. They're getting up and down the floor. They're a fun team to watch, indeed.
They are fun. And that New Year's Eve game, if people haven't looked at the schedule, that's an afternoon game. So any plans you might have for that night, you can still do both. So I'm hoping that people won't just see that date and go, oh, gee whiz, I'm not going to that, you know.
No.
The team is terrific, yeah. And they're playing Andy Kennedy basketball, which is intense defense. He loves to press. He loves to mix that up and throw people off balance. He loves to run up and down the court. And they do all those things really well. You're right. They are fun to watch. And, you know, we played Charlotte last week, who is really big and shoots a lot of three-pointers and is a good team. I mean, they have improved dramatically. Andy and I talked about it a couple of times between leading up to that game about how he thought they were the best team that we had played. He thought Charlotte was the best team we had played other than West Virginia going into the game.
Wow.
And so, you know, he was really concerned about, you know, hey guys, you know, this is conference play now. We got to lock in. And they did. And we played well and got the win. And so, yeah, two more games this week, which will be fun to get those two Texas schools in and see how we match up against them, how they've changed. You know, the transfer portal changes the complexion of a team every year. So, you know, when you look at a team and you say, oh, gee, I remember them from last year. They've got this person or that person. Well, they might or they might not, you know, oh yeah, they've got that, you know, that post player, they got that good guard and they might.
Yeah.
But so it's, you know, it makes the, it does change, you know, the challenge of what style of play, you know, the opponent might have, you know, from year to year. But anyway, it's been fun. And yeah, they're great. They're great to watch. And I hope that everybody listening will show up to these games and bring a friend and show them, you know, what Bartow's like, because it's a good time.
No, and if you haven't been to Bartow in the last 2 or 3 years, it's a different feel, man. I mean, it really is. I mean, it's much louder. The student section is definitely into it. Not to say they haven't been to it in the past, but it's a lot louder than it used to be. I'm telling you right now. By the way, the UTSA game, 3 o'clock tip coming up on Saturday, December 31st. Hey, Mark, great stuff. Happy New Year to you. Safe travels on your way home. We'll catch up next week. We're going to get into a bunch of emails for you. You'll love some of these questions that people are throwing throwing out. I think perhaps some of them may be some of your friends because some of them are kind of personal. So we are wide open here. We are totally transparent. Great. So we'll get into it.
Really. Hey, who needs enemies? Friends
exactly.
Right?
Hey, Mark.
Hey, listen, Tony. Hold on. Yeah, hold on. I'm not going to let you go quite yet.
Yeah.
Now, I'm in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
You're a radio man.
Uh-huh.
You consider yourself an Andy Travis guy, a Les Nessman guy, a Herb Tarlick guy, or a Venus Flytrap?
Well,
where do you fit in?
Johnny Fever was the guy that everyone kept saying.
Dr.
Johnny Fever. Everyone was like, yeah, you must be. Now, I went through my Venus Flytrap years when I first got in radio because I worked overnights, like most people did. But we actually started, I worked at a station called 96 Rock. It was on a hill in Hamilton, Ohio. And I'll tell you a quick little story. I was 16 years old and I was interning, and interns back then didn't get paid. And I was a record filer. That's all I did. The jocks would pull their records. We didn't have CDs yet. They'd pull the records. And of course, no one wanted to file the, it's like a roadie for a band. No one wants to put their crap away when they're done. They want to play. And so there'd be hundreds of albums out because we were playing 14, 15 albums an hour. And so it was my job to file those to make sure they were filed correctly, like a Dewey Decimal System, make sure you could find them next time they came up. And so I'm sitting there, file records. It was like, Mark, I was working three different jobs. I was working at Kentucky Fried Chicken. I was working the money room at Paramount Parks. And then I was working up at the radio station. I considered a job. And about 9:30 one Friday night, and I'm 16 years old, the guy who worked from 10 to 2, his name was Chris Geisen, didn't show up to work. And my boss, for some reason, was still up there at 9:30 on a Friday night. He said, "Do you want to work for Chris?" And I said, "Sure." I said, "Absolutely." He goes, "Well, the job is yours." And he handed me a napkin with $13,947 on it. He said, "There's your first contract." And I said, "No, I don't want to take Chris's job. I said, I just want to work for him tonight because Chris was a friend of mine." And he said, "If you don't take Chris's job, you will no longer work in radio." And I called my dad and I said, "Dad, I said, I just got my first job. I'm working 10 to 2 tonight." He said, "That's great. Now be careful." Marty Bender, who is my program director, said, gave me a $20 bill. He said, "Now go down the bottom of the hill and get a 12-pack of beer and bring it back up the radio station, and we're going to learn this on the fly." And, of course, I was 16 years old. Back then, you could drink when you were 18. They didn't check IDs. I went down there, got a 12-pack of Bud Light, brought it back up, and the rest is history. And that's how I got my start up in Cincinnati. So
How about that? Well, my dad was in the radio business.
Yes.
And so I have filed many a record. And I remember I loved going into the DJ booth and just sitting there and listening to these guys.
Oh, man.
Like you, these great voices, and then these huge turntables.
Yeah.
You know, they had those massive turntables that I don't know where you got them because you couldn't buy one that nice at your house, right?
Yep.
You know, they weighed a metric ton and they just spun perfectly balanced, you know, and I can see it like it was yesterday. And yeah, I did that same thing as these guys would, just like after school. It wasn't a job per se. After school, I would go up there and just hang out. And that was always a thing that had to be done. We got to file the records. We got to put them back in their spot, you know, and you know, we'd have a certain number. We had this one box, like a file box that had sort of the ones that we played most frequently, right? Your most popular ones were here, but everything else was on the shelf.
It was the card file system you used. It was A, B, C's and D's, and then you signed it. You had to move to the back, and of course, if you skipped a song because you didn't like it, you catch hell for it, but you had to sign you signed it anyway. Let me ask you this. Did your dad use a slide board or a pot board? Because we had a pot board now, and you had to back it up an extra quarter of a turn. So you had to cue up your records a half turn as opposed to a quarter turn. You normally did a quarter turn, and you could just start it. But on pot boards, you had to keep your pot down, hit the record, then pot it up, or else you'd hear the actual turntable engage on the air.
Mm.
You couldn't do that. So, I mean, you had to have some quick hands, man.
Yeah, I don't recall that. That's not a memory that I have. Pot meant something else back then, too. Yeah, Lord knows what that might have been. And that was, you know, that was when you could also, the other thing that was really funny, too, right, is you could smoke indoors. Right?
Oh,
you can't smoke in a business anymore. And everybody smoked.
Everybody smoked. And that was the other thing.
In the radio station, man, everybody was smoking. You know, I'm in third grade, a guy's offering me a cigarette.
It was like an AA meeting, man. You had to empty your ashtray before you left the studio because the next dude coming in was like,
everybody had like a little mini bar in their office. Like, what is this? You call this work? You're going to work?
Why do you think we got into it? It was great.
Right.
Hey, great memories, man. I appreciate you, and I will talk to you in 2023. Safe travels.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Tony. See you, pal.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.